Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Berry.
It's just our way of saying to you that you ought to be financially fit in every aspect of your life. Home and Family Finance, it covers a multitude of things, and this program is motivated by financial literacy. What do you know? What should you know? And our business here is to give you the answers to some of the serious issues and sometimes not so serious issues that come up that affect your home, your family, and your future. I'm delighted to be with you today. By the way, I'm very excited about today because we've got an all Kiplinger show. Kiplinger Finance, they do a great job. They have great editors, and I've got two editors today. Now, we don't normally have back-to-back editors, but the topics are so important. We just thought it was certainly worth it. So we're going to be starting out with Stacy Rappacon, who is she's an editor, and she's going to tell you the 10 best jobs for the future. You know, I get tons of letters from college students, not only college students, but a lot, who've graduated and are saying, hey, I can't find – where should – every time I get an opportunity to talk to you about what's out there, and I can't think of anybody that's done a better job than Stacy and her article on the 10 best careers for the next 10 years. So listen closely to what she has to say, and we'll talk about where you need to go or how you need to put this in order that may have an impact on you and your career. And it may also require that you go back to school. Who knows? But anyway, we'll talk with Stacy and get her best advice. And then we're going to turn over to another editor. And this one is the lady that I've known for many years, Janet Bodner. And she's got a very interesting topic. They did a survey. And the survey was on, of all things, the secrets of women investors. They dared ask the question, who's the better investor, men or women? You're going to just delight in hearing what the survey discovered, and she's going to be here to reveal some of the data. It's a cover story coming up in their April issue. So I'm very pleased to have both. But before I get to that, nothing has gotten as much impact, and Al was part of this, Al Peterson, our engineer. Last week we closed our show with a question about the TSA. You know, when you're going through the airport, the long lines, and you're in that security line, and you look over, and there's something that says TSA pre, and people are gushing through there. Well, I mean, if there's not that many, and you're in the line, and you may be there for 20 minutes, and by the time you get through, they're down at the concourse or there. What is a TSA? We explained that, and I got all kinds of responses from people saying, I want to know more about that. Tell me, explain how that works. Very quickly, folks, look. TSA Pre is organized by the TSA, the Transportation Safety Agency. Those are the people that actually they check you as you go through. But obviously, there are a lot of frequent flyers and other people, so they found out a way to make this work where you don't have to stand in that long line if you are pre-registered or pre-checked, and that's what TSA Pre stands for. But in order to do that, you have to go to their website. Okay, and here's how you do it. You go to the TSA website, there's an application. It's called Universal Enroll. And you enroll, you go through this process. It takes about 10 minutes. They ask you a series of questions that tell them all they want to know about you. Okay? You know, where do you live? What's your background? All kinds of things. But nothing tragic, nothing that you're going to be shy about answering. Then once you go through that, you are then told to visit a site that's near you, successfully pre-enrolled at that time. You visit what they call an enrollment center within 120 days of your application. And these sites are near airports, in or around airports. They'll take your zip code and tell you which one is closest to you because you have to go there and you have to be fingerprinted. Okay, they ask a series of questions again, and they actually fingerprint you. And then you have to do what everybody has to do. You have to pay $85, and you have to bring a credit card. A debit card's fine. And you pay the $85 for the process. You're still not finished, because if during the process of processing you, they determine that you're not qualified, you're out of your $85. You don't get that back, but it has to be paid. If, in fact, you do qualify, then you will be qualified for 5 years 5 years, and you can go through any airport, any domestic airport that participates in the TSA pre. And when you get to the airport, you'll see it. You just go over to that line, and you just go through. You don't have to take off your shoes or your belt or your coat or your hat. You're just they know who you are based on the pre-registration. You got it? That's how you do it. It's going to cost you $85. It is non-refundable. Now, what does that mean? If you know that you violate some of the things they ask you, have you ever been arrested? Not arrested, I think. Have you been charged with a felony or something like that? And it's all in there. If you know that you have, don't say no because it's going to cost you $25. Don't say it's going to cost you $85. But if everything is clear, you should make it through. And if you do, you have 5 years of going through the airport without having to stand in line. You got it? Okay, I promise to tell you that. The other thing I'm going to tell you before I get to Stacey is the euro right now is at its lowest level it's been in some 8 years. The euro is now valued at $1.10 or $1.12 or $1.08. Folks, that means that you can travel. Now, I'm not talking about investment. That's a whole different thing. But you can travel to Europe and buy things that last year would have cost you $1.50. An American dollar 54 euro. And now that euro is valued down to $1.08. It may go even lower because they're still trying to prop this thing up and they're going to flood it with more euros. It means that it's probably the value is going to drop even more. It may come pretty even with the dollar. So if you're planning a trip, go there. We're not talking about London or we're not talking England. We're not talking about Switzerland. But if you're planning a trip, look into it. What you do is buy the things that you want to do there now so that when you go, you've already paid for them. And you won't if the price gets jacked up, you won't have to pay more. You got it? Okay. Coming up after, we'll take a break here. Coming up after our break, Stacey Rapakon from Kiplinger is going to tell you about some great careers that may fit you. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And let me read from the Kiplinger Personal Finance article written by editor Stacey Rapakon. Folks, the job market in the U.S. looking good. Unemployment rate has dropped below the 5% mark, and it is expected to continue trending downward. But what about finding the right job for your future? Well, Stacey has written an article starting with a list of 784 popular occupations. She narrowed the choices to 10 by focusing on fields that have been adding to their ranks over the past decade. Stacey, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So were you excited about this story? I mean, was this a surprise to you, or were you saying, oh, yeah, I expected what we found?
There were some surprises. A lot of it is what you would expect. You know, you think you look around, see the tools that you use every day, and you could guess that technology is a booming field, a great place to look for a good job. And healthcare also is a big one. So those types of jobs riddled our best list. And so we were kind of expecting that. But to see which one specifically made the cut for us is always surprising. It was always exciting to find out.
Now, were these based on salaries, based on job availability, based on location? What did you base these on in terms of saying this is the best of the 10?
Well, we based it on national data, but that's a good point that you bring up. It really does depend on where you're located, what jobs will be available, and what industries will be booming where you are. But we focused on national data. We looked at how the occupations have grown in terms of the number of open positions or the number of positions over the past decade, and we also looked at the projections for what the numbers will be over the next decade. And, of course, we also took into account pay, and we wanted to make sure that these jobs will pay you well, and you'll be able to have a great budget with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can buy stuff.
Exactly. That's why a lot of people work, right?
Well, let's get to the list here. The first, of course, is the app developer. So what's an app developer?
Well, those are the folks that create all of those handy tools that you have on your cell phone, on your smartphone. So any app that you use, any application that you use, That's who worked on it. They also create apps for desktops, and they developers of systems software are also looking good for the next decade.
Okay, and here's what Stacy is telling you, folks. The total number of jobs available, over 700,000. It's a job growth, and the median annual income is about $43,430. Have I got the right statistics here?
Well, the $43,000, that's actually the median salary for all jobs in the United States.
Okay.
For app developers specifically, it's actually over $96,000.
What?
As you can tell. Yeah, it's a very lucrative job.
What? Right, $96,461.
Right.
Wow.
So that's about double the median for all jobs in the country.
And that's because there are not enough of them around, I guess. That's what, I mean, they're looking to draw you into this, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. And they're actually seeing increases in their income because of that, because there's such a high demand for them. Yeah. Every company, no matter what they do, most companies are working on a mobile strategy for their business. So there are lots of jobs available for app developers, and there's a skills gap there. So while there's a lot of jobs available, there's also not that many people that can fill all those jobs that have all of the qualifications that employers are looking for. So it's a really great field.
And if you're in your junior or your freshman or sophomore year in college, it wouldn't hurt you a bit to say, okay, I think let me look into this and maybe take a minor in that or even a major, right? I mean, that's where it's happening.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, for app developers, one of the things we also looked at for putting this list together is education requirements because, you know, I mean, it's all over the news how much student loans are weighing down on people
right,
and how much
right.
the cost of college is weighing on people. So we tried to favor jobs that actually don't require as much education.
Great.
So we were figuring that the lower your investment, the bigger your chances of a better payoff in the long run are.
Stacy Rappacon is my guest. When we come back, we'll find out what's number two and number three on this list as well. Got to be important if you're looking for a job, and Stacy's got it all in her article. She'll tell you where you can find it too. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our topic today is one that I think anybody looking for a job is tuning in, because Stacy Rappacon, who is one of the editors at Kiplinger Finance, Personal Finance, has written this article that really list out these jobs, folks. And they've done a good job. They've done their homework here so that you don't have to, but you do have to get to them. And Stacy, where can I find the article?
You can find the article at Kiplinger.com. It's right there on the homepage right now.
Okay, Kiplinger.com. I was surprised by the second, which is a nurse practitioner. Were you?
A nurse practitioner actually has landed on our list for the past few years. So no, not really. I wasn't surprised, but it's a great job.
Okay. And the folks, the thing that the average median salary here, again, what is that, 96,000, somewhere around there? What's the?
Above 97,000 for nurse practitioner.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Golly, that's fantastic. Okay. So, but that does require some education, right?
That's right. You do need a master's degree to become a nurse practitioner. So it will take a bit more of an investment, but as we've already covered, the median annual salary should make that investment pay off.
Okay. I'm not surprised by three and four. They both involve computers. Information security analyst and then a computer systems analyst. That's obviously there's a reason for that, right?
That's right. For information security analysts, all of the problems, all the hackers out there are really driving the demand for these types of professionals. All companies need them to come in and make sure that all the data that they have is protected.
Okay, and their salaries range from $85,000 down to about $79,000. Still nice money to be made. Next on the list, a physical therapist. Okay, there are 218,000 jobs available with an annual salary of about $82,000. That's interesting. Is this just a nursing homes or hospitals or where?
Yeah, nursing homes, hospitals, just wherever there's a medical office, really.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and it's the aging baby boomers that are really pushing the need for physical therapy.
It's interesting. The physical therapist is 218,000. Then the market research analyst jumps down to 22,000 jobs. Not nearly as many available, but a nice salary of 62,000 or more. And Stacy, are these jobs all over the U.S. or is there some particular location where you're going to be, you have a better chance?
Well, something like market research analyst, the big cities will be a good place to look for that type of job in New York and any big city that has these big corporations that have a lot of data that they need crunched.
Okay. All right. And now, folks, I'm going to give this to you rather quickly. Medical stenographer at 63,000 jobs available, a salary of about 68,000. Dental hygienist, 206,000 needed, annual salary of about 74,000. Operations research analyst. What's that? What's that, Stacy?
Those are the people that really help firms figure out how their business can work more efficiently using mathematical and analytical models.
Okay.
So they figure out how to get your business going at the lowest cost.
Okay. Operations research analyst is about 94,000 jobs available, median salary about 78,000. And then the health services manager, 333,000 jobs available with an annual median annual salary of $93,000. And this is interesting, $333,000. It tells you the importance of healthcare in this country, doesn't it?
It does. And there are a growing number of offices and facilities opening, and they really need those managers to come in and help them operate.
Okay, so you hear this and you're not qualified in a particular field. Are any of these folks allowing, if you're in training or if you're willing to train over, do they have any assistance to help you, or do they work like that?
Some of them require lower degrees. Medical stenographer and dental hygienist, for example, you could do with an associate's degree.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right, but nicely done, Stacy, because it's important information, folks, and you can find this again at Kiplinger.com. The list is there for you. So you've done all the hard work, Stacy. Anything that you want our listeners to know that of all of this that you think is important?
Well, I think it's important to remember that, you know, we crunched all the numbers for you, but it is important to consider what you are good at, what you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important to look at the numbers and to consider what income you can expect. But what's more important is that you figure out what you'd be good at and what you'd be happy doing.
Kiplinger Personal Finance Editor Stacy Rapakon, who's done a good job for us, thank you so much for joining us. Come back and see me again, would you please?
Thank you.
Okay, and we stay on the Kiplinger side. Coming up next, Janet Bodner, and why women may be better investors than you guys are. She'll tell us all about that. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
You be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Our sponsors are the Defense Credit Union Council and the CUNA, the Credit Union National Association, all in business and interested in making sure that you are financially fit. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. You're not in it alone, guys and gals out there. You got some help, just use it. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And as we always say, whether you're in the military or not, everybody ought to be saving a little something, and I hope that you are. Now, when it comes to saving, it also means that you got to do some earning, and sometimes through investing. And, you know, a lot of folks are doing that, men and women. As I said, we're in all Kiplinger Day today, and a special report caught my attention, folks, because I think Kiplinger is trying to start a little war, you know, a little, not really, but their April cover story and reader survey revealed data that they found in a special report on the secrets of women investors. So this gender war is who's a better investor? How are women investors different from their male counterparts? Okay, that's okay. For starters, they do more research and they panic less. Wait a minute, I'm starting to feel the blood rush to my face. And guess what? They get better results. Who says? Well, I'll tell you who says. Janet Bodner, editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance, is with us right now. She says, because she was responsible in part for this survey. Welcome to Home and Family Finance, Janet.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
This is war. This is what you're doing here.
Oh, you're just saying that.
This timely topic is explored in depth in the cover story of Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine's April issue. This is amazing. Were you surprised by the results?
Well, not totally. A number of years ago, in fact, 2006, I wrote a book on women and money. It was called Money Smart Women. Hmm. And I quoted a study that was done in the 1990s by two researchers at the University of California at Davis. And what they did was they plowed through tens of thousands of brokerage accounts. And what they found was that women's accounts had outperformed men's accounts. And this is a classic study that has been cited year after year. And lo and behold, another study done different source. It was done by a trading platform or investing platform called OpenFolio, and they did that very recently in 2014 and 2015. And lo and behold, they found exactly the same thing. 2014, which was a very good year for the market, mm-hmm. the women's portfolios outperformed the men's portfolios. And last year, which was a lousy year for the markets, women also did better. Both men and women lost money last year, but women lost an average of 2.5%. Men lost 3.8%, almost 4%. So again, the women did almost a point, more than a point better than the men did. So it just seems to be a continuing thing, and there are a couple pretty good reasons.
Yeah, and I you know what? One of the reasons, I don't know if you've seen a commercial for, I guess it's one of the insurance companies, where they swing through with the Tarzan with his girlfriend, or whoever Jane is, and they land on this, and she's asking this monkey, where should we be going? And, of course, Tarzan, not him. Men don't, we don't like to listen to anybody else. We think we know how to do it. And that plays in this to some degree, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does, because they're women are more likely to take their time before they make an investment decision. They do their research, you know, they study, and then when they make their decision, they stick to it. They're less likely to bail out because, you know, they have a fair amount of confidence in it. And here's the key, they trade less. It's not so much that they're smarter stock pickers, but they just, you know, trade less, and that means they incur fewer costs. I mean, when you trade, you're paying commissions on both ends, you know, when you sell, and probably sure. You're buying something else. And maybe if it's a taxable account, you have to pay some taxes on it, so you just lose out. And again, studies have shown consistently that men trade more frequently than women do. And that alone, if you don't even factor in anything else, means that women are going to come out ahead.
And I love this this particular note. Nearly 90% of the respondents say they primarily learn about personal finance from financial publications and websites. In addition, women are more likely than men to ask questions of a financial advisor or talk to friends and family, and men are more likely to watch financial news on television. I mean, it really is about behavior and how we behave differently.
That's right. You know, and it's not so much that it's good or bad. It's not so much that there's a war necessarily going on here. It's just that they have different habits and different preferences. So the ideal, of course, is that they should work together. I always say this. This is my throwaway line, which I'll give you now instead of waiting till later.
Okay.
Together, men and women just make a SOCO combination because they both have strengths that they can play on, assuming they listen to each other, which is a big assumption.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. I mean, eventually, of course, when you're talking about your dollars out there, you want to put aside the little, intolerances that you have.
Right.
That's,
exactly.
You know, yeah, it's about making money. And women
right.
seem to say, this. There's another point you said, women were more likely than men to say their number one personal financial goal is to retire with financial mm-hmm. security and peace of mind. Mm-hmm. Men are more interested than women in leaving a legacy for future generations. It just goes along how we are and how we behave.
That's right. That's exactly it. That was very, very interesting. Now, men, of course, are also interested in retirement as well, but in numbers, and this was a survey that we did of our own subscribers, our own Kiplinger subscribers, and there were 1,500 of them, almost evenly divided, 50-50 between men and women. And sometimes they were, you know, pretty much on the same page as far as the types of investments they own. For example, they all owned stocks. They all owned actively managed mutual funds. So there were some great similarities. But there were some differences as well. And as you say, you know, one of the things was more men were concerned about leaving a legacy than women were.
Yeah, yeah. It's I don't know what it is about us. But we're talking with Janet Bodner, the editor. We hit the gold mine here in getting her on to talk about this. Women are from Venus, men are from Mars, even when it comes to investing. And we'll talk more about what this study shows and how you can put it to good work for yourself. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back with more.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is Janet Bodner. She is the editor, Kiplinger Personal Finance. Kiplinger, for the past 9 decades, folks, has led the way in personal finance for business in terms of forecasting. It was founded back in 1920 by W.M. Kiplinger. The company developed one of the nation's first successful newsletters in modern times. And so all of this information is available to you. All you have to do, I think, Janet, is just go to where Kiplinger.com. Is that where they can?
Kiplinger.com, right. And the story we're talking about is our April cover story. It's The Secrets of Women Investors. And you can find it on newsstands. And also you can, or in your mailbox if you subscribe, but you can also find it online at Kiplinger.com.
The article gives, as you point out, equal time. It includes a sidebar.
Right.
On the strengths of male investors. But what you seem to be saying is that if you really want to make it work together, you're a lot more successful than if you try to do this independent of one or the other.
That's right. I mean, there are so many things that are interesting about this. For example, you know, the study that I mentioned earlier, which was done in the 1990s about investment accounts and how frequently people traded in their accounts, what they found was that married men traded less often than single men. And as a result, as you said, they incurred fewer costs and they got better returns. And the researchers attributed that partly to the fact that they were married and their spouses were kind of holding them back, or perhaps it was that they felt more responsible for a family and they were less likely to make spur of the moment decisions.
Sure.
And that sort of thing. So it really made a big difference, sort of a civilizing influence of the women folk upon the men folk.
Yeah, and does that go to choice as well? Because we can talk about the frequency of trade, but what are you trading? What are you buying? What are you deciding on? Did the survey indicate who makes a better choice of what the investment should be?
No, they really didn't go into that. Or if they did, they didn't necessarily publish those results. So I can't speak directly to that. I could make some assumptions, though. I could think that, if you're a single person and all you have to look out for, the only person you have to look out for is yourself, you may be more willing to take a flyer on something mm-hmm. highly speculative. But if you're saving for your kids' college education, or if you're saving for your own retirement, and you're thinking about a spouse, too, because it's a joint pot of money that you're saving for both of you.
Sure.
You may be much more conservative. And I will say this. This is where men come in very handy as far as women are concerned. Women can tend to be more conservative in their investments because they worry that they're going to run out of money. Statistically, women tend to be the survivors,
mm-hmm.
They live longer, and so it's very concerning to them that they may run out of money. And so they sometimes tend to be conservative in the way they invest. And so men can kind of, that's where men can come in. And I always say that, you know, men can pull women out of CDs, you know, certificates of deposit,
right.
And women can make sure that men trade less frequently, you know, so it's a kind of a two-way street here. So the women are taking a little more risk with their investments. The men are taking a little less risk with their investments.
And where are we in terms of the willingness of, you know, quote unquote, this is a man's world. What if it ever was, it certainly isn't now. And I think that's a good thing. So are what about the frequency of women playing a role in the marketplace? Did the survey chance upon whether men are saying, okay, you might do a better job of this. I agree. So you lead the way. Is that happening at all? Do we know?
Well, I'll tell you this. One of the things we did within this story was we interviewed at least half a dozen women who were very successful either on Wall Street or in the financial world in general. A couple of them were mutual fund managers. One of them is the head of trading at TD Ameritrade. Another woman runs a money management firm in Maryland. So there are women in this business who have become quite successful. If you go on a micro level down to the household, you know, sometimes not a lot has changed. In our survey, for example, we asked who is the most likely person to make the investment decisions in your household.
Right.
And people could choose themselves or they could choose, you know, we do it as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And men were more likely to say, way more likely to say, we do it ourselves. Like 80% of the men say, we make the decisions. But the women were more likely to say, I do it jointly with my spouse. So if you do the math, there's a little bit of a disconnect here. You know,
yeah.
Maybe the men think they're making the decisions. Women think they're having some input, right? But again, women are more likely to say it's a joint decision, whereas men are more likely to say, hey, we're going it alone. And I think this is just a, you know, it's just a throwback, if that's the right word,
yeah.
Or a continuation of the way people think.
And I wonder, do we find that millennials and Generation X are more tolerant of each other than, say, my generation, where, you know, it was never thought of? Even if the woman was doing some of the work, it was always thought that that was what the man was doing.
Right.
He made the money and he decided where it was going and all that. And it wasn't true because my grandmother and my mother were very involved. But publicly, it was always, well, you know, I defer to him. I think it's a different world today, Janet. I really do.
Well, you know, that is true. And a lot of the issue, you know, the issue of, say, older spouses not being informed necessarily of what their husbands were doing, because the husbands were taking care of the money, and older
right.
people tend to, some infrequently, not to really know, be aware of what's going on. And I think that's probably less common among younger people in general. But, you know, it is true that some of these male-female differences do show up among even younger people. You know, some things, the more things change, the more they stay the
same.
Even
yeah.
though women are working, they're controlling more money on their own. Even in our study, another interesting thing was...
Hold that thought, because I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about the number of women now in college graduating more than men. My guest is Janet Bodner, who is the editor of Kiplinger Personal Finance. We're talking about this new article called The Secrets of Women Investors. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. We're talking with Janet Bodner, the editor of Kiplinger Financial Magazine. And you know, the beauty of this is Kiplinger Personal Finance. And the beauty of the article is that they've dared enter into, you know, who behaviors. Women investors seem to... Well, not seem to. The results are that they do better in the investment market than men. And do we know why that is? Well, we're talking about that. Janet, go ahead. You were going to bring up a point here, and I had to take a break. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. But, you know, one of the things we asked our subscribers in our survey was, we asked them, how would you describe your investment risk tolerance?
Okay.
or low risk, below average, average, above average. And what we found was that men were more likely than women to say that they had above average risk tolerance. The percentage was 39% of men versus 29% of women.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing was we did a little, we broke out a subset of women who were single, number one, single, mm-hmm. and also they had a high net worth, or they had a lot, you know, several hundred thousand dollars in investable assets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had a higher risk tolerance and above average risk tolerance. Even more of them said that they had an above average risk tolerance. So it seems that when they're on their own and they have money to invest, they take a greater interest in what they're doing, and they are, you know, willing to take a little bit more
sure.
risk as well.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, the issue that I brought up as well with you was that we now know that graduating from colleges, there are more women graduating with degrees today than there are men, which says to me that things are changing. I mean, that's mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing. But the point is that women feel apparently that their role is as valued as a man's in terms of what we do out here in the big world. And men seem mm-hmm. to feel like I'll take the other role. I'll be the supporting parent if I need to do that. Mm-hmm. I think that's refreshing. I know with my three, I've got a 28, a 26, and a 23-year-old. And mm-hmm. they don't think a thing about it being male-female. They just think about mm-hmm. what are you capable of doing and go do it.
Yes, and that's kind of comes back to what we were saying before, where both men and women have their strengths, and if they're actually willing to listen to each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, they can, as a combination, together as a couple, they
yeah.
can do a lot better than either of them can do on their own.
So
and
if, they're
if
not,
they acknowledge that, you
right,
know?
So not role-playing. Don't play a role. Just, right. I mean, you know, you're not supposed to do this, and you're not supposed to do that. Well, we're supposed to do whatever we can together that makes it better. And I think that's what I'm detecting. Do you get the same sense?
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's certainly what we preach here at Kiplinger because, again, and I've said this before, too, when you talk about retirement, for example,
yeah.
you want to retire together. I mean, that's the whole
absolutely,
point.
Absolutely,
right?
Right.
So you want to both put, you know, you want to save as much as you can. You want to talk about how you're saving. You want to amass as big a nest egg as you can so that you can have that retirement together. And if you're both going in your own direction, or if one of you isn't doing anything or not thinking about this at all and depending on the other person, that's really not a good thing. And it's not good for the other person either, because nobody wants that sole responsibility. You know, it's nice to share the responsibility.
Yeah, and I think if you are aware that, I guess when I talk about role playing, if there is no role to play, when the idea is what's good for you and your hubby or and your wife and your family, then you're going to say, okay, look, let's just do whatever is right. If you have the sense that you can invest and you feel good about it, go for it, and I'll help mm-hmm. you. And I mean, either way, and I think that's healthy. It's healthy for family. It's healthy for our economy. It's healthy for America.
That's right. And you can bounce ideas off people. I mean, you don't have to go it alone. It's kind of a relief, you know,
yeah.
to be able to say, hey, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's very true. All right. The book, the title of the April cover story, Secrets of Women Investors. You can find it on your newsstand or you can go online, which is Kiplinger.com, and just read and see what you think about it. Janet, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I know you're busy. Any other surprises that you can share with me that are coming up that I should know about, that you know about?
Well, we've kind of just said that, you know, this is going to be sort of the year of the woman for our magazine. And we have another special report coming up in a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be focusing not so much on investing, but just on the longevity issue and financial security and how you can build financial security for a lifetime. If you're a woman whose lifetime is potentially going to be longer than your male spouse. So we're going to be talking about that as well.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it. Can I make you promise to come back and talk with me again soon?
Paul, I'd be happy to talk to you.
You guys, all of the editors. I have so many wonderful editors that sit in with us on the show. Thank you so much. It's good to be with you, and thanks for being here, Janet. Janet Bacher, my guest.
Thank you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed it, folks. Go to Kiplinger, read up on this and all the things we talked about. You can always get to us at hffradio.com. I'll be here next week. Hope you'll join us then. Bye now.